Hello and welcome to another episode of the Selfish Podcast. Today we have Catalina Hellman, who I'm really excited to share with the audience and to get to know her passion a bit more and why she does what she does. But I think you'll find a lot of value in this conversation. So welcome. Can you share with the audience and myself, where in the world are you?
Hi, Luke. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure and an honor to be on your show, obviously. I'm based in Munich, Germany, and it's a wonderful sunny day outside here today.
Oh, yeah. Nice. And we actually met through a podcast group where you're sharing what you do, and I thought it was really interesting. I think it's something important for people to sort of just know about, you know, just to have a realization about it. But before we get to that area, I'd like to know a little bit more about you personally. Can you paint me a picture of what life was like pre 10 years old for you?
When I was 10 years old. Yeah, I grew up in a really, really beautiful place south of Munich in the Bavarian countryside, basically. And it was really sort of this peaceful, idyllic, nature-based surrounding for me. Really beautiful. And yeah, I mean, I'm now living in the city itself. So it's not like that anymore, not that idyllic and not that nature-based anymore. But Munich is a wonderful city, very green. I love it here. Yeah.
So. Oh, nice. And as people hear later, imagine them stems of being in nature in your childhood is what's made you passionate and driven to where you are now a bit.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I was traipsing around the countryside as a kid and the forest, and there is a lake nearby where I used to live and where I grew up, and nature's always really been a part of my life. So yeah, it's brought me on this journey that I'm now on as well. Yeah.
Yes. How did you find your school life when you was a child? Did you enjoy school?
Yes and no. Let's say in the beginning, like, you know, elementary school was fantastic. My best friend, she came, like, she was living on a farm and operating like real life little farm. And you know, I remember being with her at her house, you know, seeing all the animals and being like in the middle of this very small farm life. So very, like, let's say back to the roots for modern agricultural standards as well. And then, of course, you know, when I grew up and when I got a bit older, let's say life in the countryside became a bit, I wouldn't say boring, but, you know, I was ready for bigger environments, let's say, for other experiences that I wasn't getting there. So it became a bit repetitive, a bit too sheltered for my taste. So that's when I, you know, for my studies, I went to the city, and that where I've been ever since.
Okay, nice. And do you remember when you was like at your youngest memory? Do you remember like your first dream or ambition or something you wanted to do when you was older?
No, not really. I mean, one of my earliest memories that I can think of right now was at the beach with my family. We used to go to the Italian beach once a year as a family holiday back then, and that's one of my earliest memories that I remember. But I mean, of course, also all the, you know, all the childhood memories that I have from my home, the garden. We had a big garden and a stream running through the garden, so you know, all things to do with the stream and fishing and, you know, building little dams, that kind of stuff. So yeah, I remember that.
Oh, nice. Yeah. And so how did you get, if you can just briefly explain, like, what is your passion now, what it is you do now, and then what led you that path?
Yeah. So today I'm a certified life coach. I'm coaching people on the topic of climate change. I'm actually also a certified climate change coach. And my passion around that is to bring the tools of coaching that I have found so immensely helpful for myself in my own life, in my own personal growth, to people who are worried about climate change, who are maybe fearful about the future due to climate change and due to environmental destruction, but who want to do something about it, who want to, let's say, take some form of climate action, either externally or internally. Internally, I mean, and find a way to, you know, navigate those feelings and just want to feel better and more empowered to, deal with all the emotions that come from climate change, that come that usually come up around climate change, or also externally, which could mean a variety of things. I mean, it's up to every individual to choose, of course, but it could be anything from, you know, raising the topic of climate change more often in conversations. It could be taking measures to reduce their carbon footprint, to, you know, eat less meat, things like that. Or it could also lead to some sort of community-based action, like, you know, forming a community with others to think about what could be improved in their town, in their city. Any type of activism, really, that could be chosen by those people. That is, I'm not talking about that to people in terms of, I'm not telling them what to do or how to do it. What I want to, what I am doing is I'm giving people the tools of coaching to, first of all, manage their emotions around climate change, process their emotions around climate change so that they can feel better, feel less helpless and powerless and you know, less fearful and anxious, but more empowered and yeah, able to do something, get their power back to act, to do something, and then choose their particular type of action that they want to do based on their individual circumstances, their life, their abilities, their skills, their lifestyle also, you know, maybe for someone who is single and has, you know, not very many hobbies and wants to find something new to focus on, that might be a different story. And for someone who is working full time, has two kids at home, needs to be a caregiver for a family member, and time is limited, you know. So there are different lifestyles, different political views, different abilities and skill sets that people have. So I'm empowering them to take a look at all of that and to choose whatever is working for them and what they want to do, what feels aligned to them, and then actually take that action that they have chosen and implement it, get it on the ground, get it on the street. And also another topic that I'm feeling very passionate about, that I'm covering a lot also with my clients, is the topic of relationships. Like, how do I deal with people who maybe are not on the same page as mm-hmm. I am with climate change, who may be either thinking, I don't know about any of that, I don't believe it's going to be a problem, it's not going to be maybe as bad as you're making it out to be, or there are people that say, well, I know it's a problem, but there is nothing I can do about it. What do I want to do? I don't know. There is nothing I can do. So let's move on to the next topic and stop spoiling my evening with, you know, catastrophic scenario that you keep talking about, that kind of thing. So a long answer put short, I am a coach, a life coach, that is passionate about bringing all those wonderful tools of coaching to people who are feeling anxious and fearful and in some way impacted negatively by climate change, and who want to do something about it and contribute to making the world a better place.
Oh, nice. No, I find it fascinating, because especially, like you said, the relationship part as well, because I see so many people struggle with that. Like, yeah. You know, even with friends or family, like immediate family, you know, because they can have different opinions. You see it in politics, you see it in everything, really, the diversity. When deep down they say respect and love each other, but these topics, they don't know how to have the conversation without that anger inside boiling up.
Exactly.
You know? And then they make an action that they don't really... Exactly. Like, you know, and cause disharmony within the relationship. And it's like, is that going to get the job done? Is that actually going to make the difference that you want? You know, because for me, it's like, whether someone believes in climate change, they doesn't believe in climate change, the earth's here, take care of it. Both people will agree with that. You know, most people will agree that the earth should be nurtured and taken care of regardless of whatever's going on. But we could easily get into the entanglement of just, this is my opinion. And constantly stay in that, while you could have been doing something, you could have been putting that energy into actual productive use. So yeah, it's really great that you're helping people with that. I think it's something that's needed, is people just to, like you said, the coaching sort of brings them in. Apologies, because of the time of day it is here, I've got a few flies. So if I'm doing this, it's not a dance. It's just trying to get flies off my head. So how did you get to the position where you thought, do you know what, that's an issue that I want to address? Was it something you personally were like involved in with the sort of climate change, and think, or was it an obstacle in your life where you were stressed out about climate change and the pressure of what you could see?
Yeah, actually the latter. So I haven't been a climate activist at any point in my life. The classic image of the activist being someone who, you know, sits on the streets and blocks traffic or lobbies politicians openly on demonstrations or anything. But my experience with climate change and climate anxiety in particular is a very immediate one. A lot of coaches get into their topic because they once have been there where they are now helping people out of, let's say, and it's the same for me. So for me, the, let's say, turning point around climate change was 4 years ago when the IPCC report of 2018 dropped. It's that one that said that we have 12 years left to take action, to turn things around. And it's, I believe it's also the one that got Greta Thunberg on everyone's radar and Fridays for Future originated from that. And for me, that was also the beginning of my personal journey in that topic. I mean, of course, I had heard about climate change before, but it was this sort of faraway topic that didn't really touch me before I read that report or before I came across news coverage of that. And what made it so impactful for me at the time was that I had just gotten married the year before, and my husband and I were planning our family at that time. And I was thinking, after, you know, reading all these news coverage around the report, I was thinking, I mean, can I really take it on myself, take the responsibility on myself to have a kid? And you know, knowing what I now know, can I bear the responsibility of putting him or her into this world, and then maybe, you know, things won't be turning out well for humanity, and, you know, what am I going to tell them when they have my age? So that was for me the starting point for, you know, falling into a really, really deep, dark and gloomy hole. And I mean, I remember it was like one of the lowest points of my life. I was crying all day. I was questioning everything, my job, my current lifestyle, the kids plan, like the family planning that we had, and I had also the feeling that no one really could help me. So I didn't really feel understood fully by my social environment, friends, family, because a lot of those people were saying exactly the same things that people are saying to my clients, things like, we don't know the future, maybe it's not going to be as bad, and stop worrying me all the time, stop, like, you know, ruining my evening with talks about all these catastrophic scenarios. And I had the impression that even therapists that I visited around this topic didn't really, let's say, see eye to eye with me either on that kind of topic, because also many of those said, yeah, we don't know, the future is uncertain, and no one really knows, and maybe try to, you know, think about something else, you know, sort of, I wouldn't say classic distraction topic, but yeah. So long story short, I couldn't really get myself out of this black hole that I had fallen into. And it was only when I came across life coaching and this type of life coaching that I'm now trained in, that I actually understood what was going on with me, with myself, within my brain, with my anxiety, with my fear around climate change. And that is when I learned, you know, emotional processing techniques and somatic exercises and all these things that I'm now, let's say, teaching my clients. I was learning that and applying that to myself. And that really made all the difference for me. Oh, nice. And I can now proudly say that I'm now a mom. So my daughter is 2.5 years old. So it was exactly, you know, the time that, you know, when I got myself out of the hole, that I said, okay, I want to, let's say, create hope for myself, for humanity, and my kid, my daughter is my symbol of hope for myself, for my life, and hopefully also for the life of others. So that is how I'm thinking about that now. Of course, it's been a long and painful journey, yeah. But I've come out the other side, and I'm now hoping to be able to help as many people as possible to do the same.
Yeah. Nice. I love it. And I was going to ask, I was thinking, I wonder if you had a child. That was running through my mind when you said it. So it's beautiful. And congratulations on your daughter.
Thank you.
Yeah. And like you said, and I imagine that's just fueled, you got yourself into more balance, so you're more productive. And I imagine having your daughters just made you super productive, because like you said, you want to create a vision, a different outlook. So you're just even more energized, you know, but when you're in that sort of darkness, there's no energy there to actually act on the pain you can see everywhere. It's just exactly. You see it and you feel it.
Yeah.
You know, and that was,
Exactly. I mean, exactly as you said before, it's what is it serving me to focus all my energy, all my time, all my mental and emotional brain power, and to dump that into this black hole when I can use it to create something that can help others, that can help myself, that can help others, that can help the planet ultimately, because I'm not caught in that trap anymore. Yeah.
And I found for me personally, with different aspects in life, not just the environment, but just sometimes just realizing that I can be the best influence I can be. And then people pick up on that and then they want to sort of join in, or they want to do something because they see that you're enjoying what you do, you know, or they haven't thought of it. Whereas you just try and talk them into something or try and convince them of why you do what you do. Like you said, sometimes you're met with resistance because they don't want to say change, for a lesser word. But sometimes when we just do something, like I said, whether it's a communal garden and people growing their own vegetables or changing something, like I've seen some amazing pictures of people in cities, you know, turning old buildings into these garden allotment type places that the community can use, you know, and they say like, put more green in, do all they come together, it's this big community, everyone looks happy, it looks like a fun project, it doesn't feel like all the weight of the doom and gloom. It looks like, okay, like you said, there's some hope, there's some change, there is other people that are acting towards something. And in a non-violent way as well, in a beautiful way. So I think that is, I think it's powerful stuff. And I think there's a lot of people that need your service. I think your life and your pain, you know, has put you in a place where you wouldn't be where you are, or able to help others with that pain had you not have suffered it.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, it's wonderful that you are describing this communal garden project, because personally, I think climate action can come in so many forms. It can come from, you know, it can be a completely internal process or action. It can be external. And also the external one can come in a variety of you know, forms and shapes. And one of the let's say things that I find really hard to see and to experience in especially in this climate change, climate action sphere is this a massive amount of anger and judgment and blame that seems to be everywhere. You know, it seems to be like people who aren't living, let's say, completely carbon neutral in a tiny house aren't allowed to take climate, or let's say, you know, it seems like you have to be the perfect carbon zero person to be able to, you know, help others take climate action, or to be, you know, seen as an authority in that regard. And, you know, this is also often mistreated, I think, as an argument. I think we are wasting far too much time on, you know, assigning blame on who is the biggest carbon emitter, both historically or currently, and, you know, assigning blame to what happened and what is happening, rather than using all this time and energy to actually look for solutions and to do something about it. Because at this point in time, we don't have the time anymore to waste time on you know, blaming and anger and all that kind of stuff. I think we should all look forward and do something, find something to do, something that we will be able to sustain doing as well, and something that we can feel aligned to and that we can do even if no one else is doing it. That is also something really important. It probably will have to take, it will take for some people to break out of their current social cycles or social environments for a little bit, to just be different and do things differently. For example, if I'm used to a social environment that prioritizes consumption, clothes shopping, I remember back when I was, you know, in school and studying, I used to go shopping every Saturday. It was basically my pastime. And now I'm living minimalistic in comparison. So it did take a shift of mindset for me. And maybe some other people want to do some sort of mind shift in that regard as well, but they feel pressured from their environment, you know, keeping up with the Joneses and all that kind of phenomenon. And As I said, I think we are past the point in the development of climate change to be able to spend time on assigning blame and looking at whose fault it was. I think we should all look forward and realize that everything that we can do now that helps will be better than not doing anything at all. So I think everyone can find something to contribute and that he or she actually can sustain doing, because we don't need a few people that are perfect and have the zero carbon life. We actually need as many people as possible, millions of people, to do the very best they can. And that is very important for me to make it clear that this space is too much, to my taste at least, filled with anger, with blame, with anxiety, with fear, and also with things that induce fear in others, you know, media that, you know, play on people's fears and people's anxieties. Because if there is one thing that is blocking action, that is throwing people into a paralysis, then it's fear. So we actually have to get people out of the fear in order to enable them, in order to empower them to take action, to be able to come to a point where they can actually look around and see, okay, what can I do with my personal situation, with my skill set, with my circumstances? What is something that I can find for myself to do? That's what I believe about that.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, because I think everyone's unique and everyone can serve individual purposes based on their position in life and what their tools and experiences they gathered. Because if everyone tried to fix this one problem the exact same way, something else would be going wrong somewhere else. You know, everyone's got a place to be working and doing it. And sometimes for some people, it is really hard for them to make a subtle difference. But that subtle difference, if, like you said, the numbers are there, is a larger difference than one person going, like you said, really militant and cutting everything. Isn't going to make the difference. You know, it needs to be a volume thing. And I was thinking as well, because I really don't like anger or judgment. I don't think they're productive behaviors to get anything done. And I was thinking, when you were talking about the earth, I was thinking people say Mother Earth. And I was like, if you wanted to look after your mom, and I spent most of my life being a full-time carer for my mother, the last thing I'd want to do is treat her with judgment and anger as a carer, as someone that loved her. So I think for a lot of people, if they're looking at it as like Mother Earth as this thing that they love and they want to take care of, then if they're doing that with anger, if they're doing that with fear, like you said, they're not actually doing it in the most best way, the calmest way for them and for the earth itself.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, that's where we come in with this relationship topic again that I mentioned earlier, because the relationship doesn't necessarily, of course, only relate to, you know, friends and family. The relationship relates to yourself. What relationship do I have with myself, with my own values? Where am I standing on the topic of, you know, for example, reducing my carbon footprint? How important is that to me with regard to other things in my life? And then there is the relationship aspect with regard to, you know, let's say government, politics, big business, like the big polluters or the elite or those in charge that are commonly seen as those that can make the biggest difference and probably are also in a position to, you know, take the biggest steps, have the biggest leverages compared to individual people. And then it's, of course, the relationship to our social circles. I mean, how much are we daring, let's say, to go against the mainstream, maybe in our social circles? If, you know, people in the country club aren't sort of on board with that, or in our Facebook group, or in our, you know, tennis or, you know, whatever, football sports group, whatever, are we going to be doing it anyways? How is our relationship to the topic, to those in power that we believe are more equipped than us? Are we going to spend all our energy waiting for them to take action and, you know, blaming them and lobbying them and then completely ignoring or not looking at what we personally can do as well? That will also help. I'm not saying that one is better than the other. I think we need both elements, both systemic change and systemic action, but also individual change, lifestyle change, on a personal level. I think that the two elements are needed. So in all of those scenarios, relationship coaching or relationship, let's say, management comes into place.
Yeah, nice. And I could definitely resonate with what you're saying as well, with like the minimalistism, what it was making me think and feel is, because I live a very minimalist life. I live a lot off, most of my electricity is all solar paneled. So I don't have much power, like my laptop, all my technology is powered by solar panels. And, but what I noticed in having minimal clothing, like you said, and just having what you need, not necessarily always what you want, then you end up not wanting the other things anyway. So exactly. you really appreciate the little things you do have more. You're full of more gratitude for smaller things that you just notice more. It's like you free up time. So you free up all this energy that was distracted, so you can be focused to a purpose or a passion, or so you can even just think about, what is my purpose? What is my passion? So many people are so busy in so many different ways that they haven't even had that time to go like, what do I want to do? What am I really passionate about? You know, and they just see the things that upset them. And I think when something upsets us, that's a good indication that you want to do something of service in that way. For example, my love Danielle, she's just so passionate about animals and animal welfare. You know, but she used to follow feeds and stuff on social media, and she'd be really upset because she's seeing all these animals just being tortured. And it's like horrid. And I said to her, why don't you follow people that are already acting towards it, that aren't showing the worst side of things? And I said, and just share their profiles with your followers online, or like them or comment on them, just to give them, if they're already doing something that you think is valuable, just encourage it at least. So at least you're putting your energy in that place rather than in, like you said, in fear and anger, because it's very easy to see the horrible side of things. And when you do, you can sometimes not be so active. You don't have that action to do something.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, as you, I mean, that's a wonderful example that you just outlined with just commenting and supporting people who do already do things that you feel need to be done. As I said, climate action can take so many forms. It would be the best if as many people as possible would do the best they can, and, you know, maybe not stop at the commenting and the reposting and the liking of, you know, positive climate news, for example. But I think it is very important, specifically in the climate change sphere, to also acknowledge and to see and to make a point of looking for things that are empowering to you, that aren't just the sort of bad news and the catastrophe, news feeds and that kind of thing, but to see how many people are actually working on the same issue and on resolving the same problem that you are trying to resolve. In fact, you know, when I got into this sphere and into that scene, it was absolutely mind-boggling to me how many organizations and communities and I don't know, or NGOs, you name it. I mean, how many people, both on a collective, systemic, and also on an individual level, are working towards the same cause. So you can be absolutely certain that you will find your particular course that you find worthy to support, and that you will find your own little place in this whole spectrum of things that can be done against it, or, you know, to overcome that.
And where can people, if someone's now listening to this and they're like, right, this really resonates with me, and they're like, they feel the pain and the suffering of what they're seeing, and they feel they need your services, where's the best place for people to get hold of you?
Well, I would say the best way to get hold of me right now is my website. So it's www.katharinahellmann.com. We are linking that in the show notes, I believe. So that is, you know, where I'm explaining about the different options to work with me. I offer free resources, first of all, but of course, I'm also offering free one-on-one coaching sessions. You can have a free coaching session just to see whether we actually, you know, could work together, let's say. But there are coaching packages, one-on-one. But I'm also doing a group coaching program that is called Overcoming Eco-Anxiety. And that is where I'm, you know, taking my members through exactly those three steps that I outlined in the beginning. The first step is to actually get the emotional side of climate change, let's say, under control, in the sense that, you know, we process emotion. We talk about how emotions are actually generated, how to approach the source of all these debilitating and crippling emotions around climate change. Then we talk about the action part of things, what I mentioned, finding your place in the cosmos of climate action, finding your personal climate action plan, let's say, developing that and actually following through on that. And the third part is then to, you know, manage the relationship side of things, to, you know, leave behind things like people pleasing and perfectionism, and get off this anger and judgment and blame train, and focus on what is really important, and focus on what you can do actually. So that is what I'm now doing with my clients primarily. And I'll link all the resources down in the show notes if you allow that.
Yeah, I'll definitely put them in so people can go check it out, and definitely worth checking your free resources out. And do you have links to do share stuff on social media as well? If people just
totally, I'm on Instagram, I'm on Facebook, so, and also LinkedIn, so people can find me there.
Oh, nice. I'll put them all in the show notes, but I imagine they might be found straight through the website as well.
Yes. So my Instagram handle is Eco Anxiety Coach. So that is my Instagram account name. Because I'm primarily a mindset coach, so that's why I want to lead it.
Yeah, nice. And have you found in your experience so far that you get a certain age range? Is there a particular person that say, because from what I just see, just from observation and looking, that say the millennial age group and actually quite a younger, a lot of people are really in emotional turmoil with.
Yeah,
it's their future, I guess. More so, like for certain people that are a bit older, unless they've got children. Some of them already feel their best parts are gone, you know. So they're almost a bit, and they're from a different generation, a different time. They haven't had that. They haven't been born into technology, whereas I feel the younger ones have been born. They've been getting this imagery and this repetition from such a young age. Which, like, if I was to see any form of sort of negativity constantly, whether it's true or not, just seeing it through your life growing up's gonna have an impact, I imagine.
Yeah, totally. No, you know, it's been really interesting. I thought that the clientele would be primarily younger people, like I would say below 30. But interestingly enough, I've been coaching a lot of, let's say, parents and also grandparents. And also people who don't have kids, who are just simply worried about, you know, what is going on. So it's really been this interesting tableau of all ages. People from all around the world. I've even had people from Africa, you know, so it's been really very interesting, a completely broad spectrum of views and of you know, backgrounds. It's been really interesting.
Nice. Yeah, because I've even met people in my life like that I've spoke to about certain things, and when children come up, they're like, oh, well, I wouldn't put a child in this world. You know, you could see the anger within them, the frustration, the pain they're suffering. Yeah, and most of the point is like, but they're also not acting towards something. Like you said, they haven't broke through that bit within them to put purpose back in the way you did. So I think that's incredible. And now I've got someone to direct when I meet someone that's in that alignment with you. I can direct them straight to you for that.
Thank you.
I think that's an important place to, like you said, to take them out of the anger, take them out of the judgment, so they can act on something with purpose, with passion. Yeah, exactly. And make a difference. And like you said, and you end up with a team. I imagine you've probably paired up people that end up, you know, doing stuff even together because they're all aligned with the course.
Yes, I mean, I haven't yet because, you know, people would have to come from the same area in order to be able to link up. But I mean, that's definitely in my sort of midterm vision to, you know, create a community around this topic. Definitely, yes.
Oh my gosh. Is there anything in this so far in the show that we haven't covered that you would like to talk about?
I think we have covered the big points, but I would like to reiterate maybe one element that we've touched upon, and that is, I want to re-stress, let's say, that it's really up to every single one of us to find something to do and to do something. I'm finding that so prevalent as well as an opinion in some angles of that sphere that it is either already too late. You know, there are a lot of people out there who have given up all hope for change, and they are basically just busy, let's say, preparing for the worst, which has its justification to a certain degree. But personally, I'm thinking that when, you know, giving up is the only thing that is guaranteed to not improve anything at all. And we will probably never be at a point where it's better to give up and do nothing than to find something to do. So even if we've, let's say, hit 2.5 degrees of warming already with all the projections, it's still worth to take action to, you know, get maybe from 2.5 to 2.3, if you know what I mean, because every little point X will make a difference. So I'm having a bit of a, what I would say, difficulty with, you know, movements that are, let's say, preparing to, you know, shelter in place and you know, prepare for survival, because they're already absolutely certain that everything will collapse. And there are scientific, you know, factors and evidences, of course, that are pointing in that direction. But I'm deliberately choosing to focus on, let's say, the part of the action scale that is still trying to improve something. So I'm thinking personally, there will be enough time to prepare for the worst when the worst has, let's say, is proven to be coming. And I don't see ourselves at that point yet. I'm still believing, and I'm choosing to believe actively that there is hope. I'm choosing active hope for the future, for humanity, that I'm choosing the belief that now is the time to do something. And that is why I am choosing to act, and why I want to help people take action that want to take action. Of course, I'm also available to talk to anyone who has already given up and would like to, you know, emotional coaching around that and you know, how to prepare best for the upcoming, let's say, future. But for me personally, I'm saying now is the time to not give up, and now is the time to do something. And there are so many things that are already being done, and there are so many things that still need to be done, or that need doing, that need finding, that need someone who is passionate about them to do them. And that is something that I'm really passionate about, to, you know, empower people to find something for them to do. And for example, I've put together a guide that is for download on my website. It's a free guide on the 15 most effective things an individual can do to lower their carbon footprint. And most of these things are very simple to do, in the sense that they don't really change the way people live. So for example, you mentioned before that you are having a solar panel. If you can switch your whole energy supply to renewables, you can use as much electricity as before, but it will still make a difference. That's what I'm saying with that. So I'm also thinking that there is a lot of discussion around lifestyle changes that is focusing on elements that are very difficult to implement for the average person, and that don't actually make so much of a difference in terms of carbon emissions. If you take living plastic-free or zero waste, for example, it's very hard to implement for most people, I would say. It takes a long time until you get used to it. And interestingly enough, there are more effective and more, let's say, immediately important things to implement that aren't as difficult to implement, or that you know, don't come at such a high cost also financially as some other things. The biggest example of those being, for example, to reduce food waste. Actually, Project Drawdown, which is the scientific consortium of people advising on the best measures to take on climate action, they say that the number one priority for all of us should be to reduce food waste, because the food waste, like the carbon emissions generated from food waste, are the biggest of all of them in relation to others. So, I mean, that is something that basically everyone could implement just with a little planning on what they are eating and not letting things rot and not throwing food away. So if you do some sort of basic meal planning and you know, sort of pre-thinking what you are cooking and what you are eating, you can make a big difference in this very crucial part of your life without having to change anything else, really. So that's just an example. Of course, there are many other examples like that out there. But what I'm saying here is, I also want to debunk the myth that, you know, doing something about climate change is only something for the privileged and can only be done if you have a lot of money or a lot of resources available to you. I have found that to not be true. I find there are a plethora of solutions out there. And of course, many things are better or more easy to implement if you have a little bit of money to donate or to, you know, to direct towards these causes. But I mean, as you said before, you know, minimalism, minimalism isn't only for the rich. I think it's just to kind of question what we are giving our money away to. Where are we putting our money? Do we need to really put our money to buying the latest status symbol? Or can we also, you know, use our money to, you know, for example, fund climate positive organizations or other types of climate action in our personal lives? What is the biggest, what will be the biggest lever in the end for our life and for also for our emotional and mental health, health and well-being? That is what I'm thinking about that.
Yeah, nice. And I think it's important, like what you said as well, subtle changes that within themselves have more sustainability and longevity, rather than when we implement something that's a drastic life change, we always normally drastically crash, you know, and then exactly. We give up because we're like, yeah, it's too hard. I can't do this. It's too
exactly.
Hard. So subtle exactly. Little gestures of slowly, and you might look back 2 years later and realize how much growth has been in your, what you've changed, and you won't believe how far you've actually gone in things. And it's been a smooth ride. And like you said, a pleasant one, and you feel good about your choices because you feel like, oh, I'm doing something that fulfills a certain sense of fulfillment within you to be serving and not to be taken. And I think like what you said about the people that just give up and go full prep or just give up completely and don't just say, oh, I just don't care anymore. It's like you can end up in a life of taking rather than giving. And like you said, and that just speeds the process up of things going wrong. You know, it's like you said, relationships.
Exactly.
If it was a normal relationship in just like a couple, you know, if one partner gives up, you know, the relationship's pretty much doomed, you know, it's going to go that way. Whereas if you just like, you know, I'm going to just make subtle, nice gestures. I'm going to do something. You never know where that can build and what that can grow into. But I feel like nothing's ever too late for change. And as a collective, whatever scientific studies have been done, I imagine all the predictableness of drastic combined sort of unity of people isn't being put into the simulation to say, well, because they're not expecting it. You know, it's not expected that people are going to come together. So I think the possibilities are still, there is still hope. There is still that. But with hope comes, again, it's like the opposite of anger and things. There comes action, you know, because you feel like it's worth it. There's something worth doing it for.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it's been great to hear your story. We're coming to the end of the show, but I really enjoyed hearing your side and what you do.
Thank you.
I have just a few short little questions. They're just one answer questions. I ask all the guests at the end. Do you have time for them?
Of course, yeah.
Still getting flies. Watch all the flies will leave me as soon as the podcast's over. They'll go. This is because it's getting near to sunset here. So it's just sort of, it'll come out. If you had to choose one, a cat or a dog?
Cat.
What's your favorite color?
This one, turquoise.
Nice. And what's your favorite sound or noise?
Probably the sea, the waves of the sea.
Nice. And what sound or noise do you not love so much?
Screeching of metal and you know, for example, also cutting with a knife on a plate, empty.
Yeah. And what do you love about yourself?
About myself, I think I'm very motivated and driven and enthusiastic. I get passionate very easily about things. I love that about myself. Yeah.
What do you love to see in other people?
Change to the positive. Specifically in my client, change that they want to achieve that actually comes into their life because of how they are behaving, how they are doing things differently. That's a wonderful thing to see.
Nice. And the last question is, what do you love about animals?
Oh, what I love about animals, that, oh, there are so many things. just their uniqueness and their union with nature. They are part of nature so much more than we as humans have ever been, probably, or could ever be in our modern societies. Yeah, that's what I love about them.
Oh, nice. Well, it's been great to chat to you and get to know you, and hope you have a beautiful rest of your day. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Luke. Thank you for having me. Bye.
Bye.
I truly appreciate you for listening to the very end. So if you did, hit the like button, subscribe for more content just like this, and check out patreon.com/LukeGreenheart on how you can support this broadcast, this mission, and my content creation. I am creating compassionate content to share, to love, and to shine. So come check it out.